Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we'll discover two children's books written by Cache Valley authors. We'll be talking with Will Wood, author of And It Was Beautiful, and Zach Garner and Rachel Quillen Garner, writer and illustrator respectively of Half Moon on the Moon. Here's a description of And It Was Beautiful. Can something painful also be beautiful? Is there peace to be found in times of sadness and grief? The story teaches us to reach high, even as we sink low in our efforts to fully experience loss and love. Feel the sunshine and rain through lovely artwork and storytelling, this book about love, grief, and the beauty of it all. And Half Moon on the Moon, embark on a yoga adventure designed for you and your little one. Through playful poses and imaginative storytelling, this children's book transforms exercise into a bonding experience. Perfect for active play, it encourages movement and mindfulness while exploring a magical lunar landscape together. So we have with us in studio Will Wood. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good to be here.
Good to have you. Rachel Quillen Garner, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have Zach Garner in with us.
Thank you. Hey, good to be here.
Good to have you all with us. So this is a kind of a treat. I don't often talk with the authors of children's books, so I do a lot of book interviews, so this is great. This is wonderful to talk children's books. And the added zing of all Cache Valley folks.
Yeah,
representing.
Yeah. Wonderful.
And all connected and know each other somehow, a little bit, too.
Yeah, totally. Yes. Which is true of typical
Cache
Valley.
Yeah, that's typical Cache Valley.
Gotta love Logan.
Including connections to my engineer, Nick Porath.
Yeah.
So that's great. Through the musician community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People may not know Nick is famous. He's part of
quite famous.
Oh, I'm not that famous. I'm just a local awesome. Cache Valley musician.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, let's start with Will. I'll go around before we get into the book. Tell me a little about yourself, a little background.
Oh, man. Well, let's see here. I grew up in Logan, and a lot of my, friends and recreation habits were formed here in Cache Valley, so I kind of just fell in love with it, as a teenager. Went to Utah State, actually ended up graduating in art, and married my love of my life, Lauren. Now we've got three kids, and we did move away for 10 years. We owned a Great Harvest Bakery, and that was fun, but I don't know. The heartstrings were pulling us back home.
Yeah.
And so we found our way back to Cache Valley, and I kind of had my hopes up for, lots of time in the mountains, and that's exactly what I've done, and I love it here. It's so nice.
That's good. That's great. I'll throw in a kind of a UPR connection, Dr. Gordon Wood.
Wait, I know that guy.
Longtime supporter of UPR. People may have heard his name on fun drives. That's your dad.
We've got a lot of UPR mugs in the house, yeah. Yes.
That's great. Well, good to have you in. So, Zach and Rachel, tell us about yourselves.
Do you want to?
You want to start? Yeah, I can. Okay. All right, well, this is Zach. We've been married for almost 10 years now, and we're from the Valley. I grew up here. I lived in Hyde Park, Valley, hopped all around, went to Utah State for creative writing, then played in a band for a long time. We were in the music community all over the place. Nick on the sound side knows that. We played with him many times.
Our bassist.
Yeah. So we got to tour around, play a lot of music, and now we own a yoga studio together. Mm-hmm. So we own a yoga studio and kind of have always been involved in the art community all around, music, writing.
Yeah. So plug away. What's the name of your studio?
It's Soul Speak Yoga.
Soul Speak Yoga.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
And if we go to yoga, that's where we go.
Yeah. All right, so love it.
We're probably there like once a month. We've got a punch very good past thing.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I was like, I thought that you told me or Lauren did.
If I've seen you, I didn't know there was the connection.
No. So creative writing, music.
Yeah.
And now into yoga. It seems like there's probably connections there. All kind of creative.
Yeah. All creative there. And. Yeah. Also, I'm the general manager at Frederico's Pizza. That's really close here too.
Okay.
So we're all connected right around
another
here.
Another icon in Cache Valley.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
No wonder I started salivating when I saw.
Yeah,
this.
Yeah. You're like you could smell the pizza almost just coming through.
It's like Pavlovian.
That's right. Rachel, tell us about yourself.
Okay. Well, I'm Rachel. I started doing yoga Maybe like 12 years ago. And then we got married and we have a daughter and a son now. And we wrote this because my daughter would come home every, or I'd come home every day and my daughter would say, "Why do you even like yoga? I don't get it." So Zach was like, "I'll write it." And I said, "I guess I'll draw. I don't consider myself an artist. I'm a doodler."
Okay.
So I did the illustrations and yeah, we just wanted other kids to do yoga with us.
Right. So. Do you, by the way, do you do, I don't do yoga, but do kids do yoga? Do you have kids come to the studio?
Yeah, actually we're going to try and do like a kids yoga camp this summer for like all, like different age groups. Mm-hmm. So yeah, look for that because that'll be fun.
Yeah.
And we'll probably do like a little reading during it.
So. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with Half Moon on the Moon. So this began when, Zach, when your daughter came and asked her mom, "Why do you even do yoga?" So what sparked then in you?
Well, it kind of sparked because, I mean, I used to do yoga a bunch. And then when we had the kids, I couldn't go as much because I was the, she was the teacher and instructor. So I had to babysit and sit at home. And she'd always ask us, she'd be like, "Why does mom have to go to yoga again?" Like, I don't think she understood that we owned the business as well or anything like that. Like, always like, because sometimes a class would be on Sunday. So like, everyone would be home, but she'd be like, "I got to go teach this class." And Solara, that's her name, our daughter, just didn't get it. She's like, "I just don't get why someone would want to go do yoga." Like, that, and that's kind of what the whole premise of the start of it kind of came from. Like, isn't it just like breathing? Isn't it just like laying on a mat, like not understanding? And then it kind of sparked the idea because Rachel had been like, "Hey, you should write this about this because we could promote this through the yoga studio." And I'm like, you know, I've written a lot of creative writing things and written a lot of music and things like that, but never a, I was like, a kid's book. I've never thought of that. Like, I've written a full-length novel, like a more adult-aimed novel. Mm-hmm. Then I was like, you know what? Like, because, I mean, Will would know. I used to hang out with John and all of our friends. We're very imaginative, creative, running around on the streets. Just, and I always big imaginations. And then I was like, you know what? A kid's book, that actually translates even a little bit more than you can into like a 400-page novel. Like, you can get really whimsical and fun. And that's kind of where it all came from. I was like working with my daughter a lot and the thought of, oh, this idea of how is yoga whimsical or fun? How is physical activity almost fantastical in some ways?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, Rachel, because I could stand in for your daughter, right? Because I don't do yoga. I don't do yoga, and I kind of don't get it. I mean, I respect it, right? Mm-hmm. I respect what you guys do, but so, and I probably stand in for, you know, a portion of our audience listening right now. So let me ask this: why do you even do yoga?
Okay, well, I first went because of the exercise, of course. And I had hurt my back like when I was 23, which is a really long time ago. And I always heard that it helps with like back pain, which it does. Like, it's almost completely like I feel great now. But I went for that to start with. But most people say they go for the exercise side, but then they usually end up staying for like the meditation and the spiritual side of it. So I started going and just never stopped. Like, went to one class, and then it was like 5 classes a week, and yeah, it just makes me happier.
Yeah. So exercise, imagine flexibility, balance and all that, but also the meditation.
Yes. Yeah. And there's definitely a spiritual side of it as well, just connecting and things. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now we have exotic stuff like goat yoga.
Yes. Yes, we have a bunny yoga in April.
You have a bunny yoga.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. It's a zuta, and it's like an Easter thing. So. Yeah.
There's hot yoga. Yep. I've heard of, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. All these things.
All kinds.
Yeah. So how did you approach this? You're answering your daughter's question, and it ends up being this adventure. Half Moon on the Moon and some other places, right?
Yeah, it goes all over the place. And I kind of approached it because I'm like, the parts that I knew the most about yoga, since I hadn't done it a lot or wasn't like, in, I wasn't trained to teach it or anything like that. So I haven't gone through the whole training process. I was just, this was Rachel's dream, the yoga studio, when I kind of went full in with her. So I kind of approached it. I'm like, okay, I've got to do some research. And the research that I had done anyway, I'm more of the, because I minored in political science as well, but I loved the philosophy side of it. Like, and there's a lot of philosophy in yoga. So I was like, oh, you can do little plays on the fantastical, this fictional, like being on the moon, or there is one line in it is just like, as a Zen, is that a wizard? Like, makes magical stew? Is that a name? Like, but it's an idea and there's a philosophy behind it. So I kind of approached it that I'm like, okay, I've got to learn a bit more, because if I'm going to put in all these poses that I haven't done all of them myself, okay, I need to know what they are, what they do. So I had Rachel write me up a list of these different poses that, because I'd done it a bunch, but it had been years now, because I had to be with the little ones for so many years on those days. And I'm like, okay. And then I looked at them and I'm like, okay, well, what is interesting? Because a lot of the pose names, like half moon. So it's like, oh, it's fantastical. There's like crow pose. And like, and I'm like, oh, but all these things are taking things in the real world that you could implement into a magical kind of story to kind of explain to, the idea was to explain to a kid using the fantastical names and kind of mixing with fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's have you read a little bit from the book. Then we'll take a break, come back and talk with Will about his book as well, and go back and forth. But is there, you know, a few pages you'd like to read?
Yeah, I'll start this little part at the beginning so you can get an idea of like kind of the questions that my daughter like gave. And this is a couple pages in, so it's her sitting at home wondering like, why is mama yoga? Why does she love it? Like, and then wondering about it in general. So here it is. Okay. But why did mom love it, this yoga, she wondered? Lying flat on a mat just seemed like a bother. Were there monsters? A spaceship? A princess? A castle? A villainous witch with a poisonous apple? Or was it just dancing? Or twisting? Or breathing? Either way, she'd be bored staring up at the ceiling. Her thought it did float there as the door opened wide and mom sauntered in with a smile and stride. My darling, I missed you. Were you having fun? The girl ran to meet her with a jump and a hug. Mom, I have questions. Can you twist like a pretzel? If you breathe in deep, does it burn like a fiery missile? Can you stretch out your arms like some rubbery glue? Is Zen like a wizard that makes magical stew? There's a little clip there.
Yeah, that's great. And then they have adventures on the moon and other places.
Yes, and then that's the very beginning. And then it's like actually gets into it, and you can kind of see in the illustrations like I implement all of those initial thoughts. Like they meet the wizard named Zen that makes magical stew, and they meet the witch with the poisonous apple, and all of her like, is this what it is? Then on this adventure, they kind of run into the things, but then implement the poses that they're doing as they're meeting it. So
yeah. So Rachel, did this solve the problem? Your daughter read the book and said, "Now I understand."
Get it?
Actually, no.
I was guessing no. Yes.
I took her to a yoga class just like a month ago, and like halfway through, she said, "I'm so bored," and so I took her out. But she's only six.
Yeah.
So we have time.
Yeah.
To get her.
Well, this is quite a treasure, you know, as she grows up, this book written for her, right?
Yeah, actually, it's funny because we dedicated it to her, and she read that, and she was like, I don't even like this book.
Kids.
But she does. She does That's now. Good, yeah. But it's funny.
She was involved a lot in it.
Yeah.
But well, she wants me to write a ballet one.
Do you want to? Oh, ballet. Yeah. So maybe that's like, next. Maybe that's next.
She's like, because she actually does ballet, so she understands that more, and she's like, how about you make one about ballet? I'm like, that would take her some research. I have less background in ballet.
Yes, that's true. By the way, you ought to put that review from your daughter on the cover, on the back.
Yeah.
It's an honest review, right?
Yes, an honest
review. Which hopefully be revised as she gets older.
As she gets older, exactly.
Yeah. Well, reset the scene here. We're talking with several Cache Valley authors and discovering a couple children's books. We've been talking with Zach and Rachel Quillen Garner. We'll continue to talk with them as we go along, writer and illustrator respectively of Half Moon on the Moon. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Will Wood. His book is called And It Was Beautiful. We'll have more following this.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, a conversation with journalist and author Jelani Cobb about how this country's history of racism against the black community helps us better understand immigration enforcement in the current moment. That's next time on Latino USA.
Tune in Tuesday morning at 11 here on UPR.
Programming support here on Utah Public Radio comes from our members and Salt Lake City Weekly, a Utah news source since 1984, covering music, dining, nightlife, and more in Salt Lake City and beyond. Available weekly at 1,800 locations across the Wasatch Front or online at cityweekly.net.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're discovering a couple of children's books written by Cache Valley authors today. And we're talking with Zach Garner and Rachel Quillen Garner, writer and illustrator, respectively, of Half Moon on the Moon. We talked a little bit about that. We also have with us in studio Will Wood, author of And It Was Beautiful. Here, let me tell you a little bit more about And It Was Beautiful. We'll talk about it. Can something painful also be beautiful? Is there peace to be found in times of sadness and grief? The story teaches us to reach high even as we sink low in our efforts to fully experience loss and love. Feel the sunshine and rain through lovely artwork, storytelling in this book about love, grief, and the beauty of it all. So, Will Wood, how did this come about, this book?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a heavy story, and, you know, people will, like, read the book that know me well, and they're like, where in the world did this come from, Will? Like, I thought, you know... But it really was catalyzed by, I do process thoughts and emotions with writing, but usually it's like I write it and I kind of burn it up and, you know, I just need to write it out to make sense of things. I'm an ADD-er, so it's hard to hold multiple thoughts at one time, but writing helps me do that. So, but to answer your question, my mom died about 4 years ago. And we kind of her health. She had had some bad health, but then she got a kidney transplant, and we moved back to Utah. And the kidney transplant, like, literally brought her back to life. I mean, her mind, her vision improved. Like, she was watching our kids again, driving around, doing stuff. And then she got COVID, and she was gone in a month. And so, you know, it. I felt like that last 5 years was like such a gift, and I had so much to be grateful to, you know, just be able to like spend time with her and have her back, you know? But at the same time, I was obviously devastated, and I was laying in my bed one night. And I remember I'd actually like taken some NyQuil because I was like, I can't sleep. I don't want to like sit here with these feelings that I'm feeling. And I was probably crying and stuff. And I was like, I'll write it. I'll write this away. Like, I'm going to explain what I feel. And I remember I kept feeling like something had been torn out of my chest. And there was this big gaping hole. And I was like, I felt like I was going to die. And I was like, I'm not going to die. I have an awesome family and a wife and like all these things to be thankful for. But I just felt like, and so in my head, I pictured, you know, a family of trees, and one of the big trees just got uprooted and yanked out of the world, and it tore the roots from the other trees. And, you know, it felt like a breaking of sorts. But I was like, but we're still here. My mom wouldn't want us to wallow. And so that's where this story of trees kind of came from.
Yeah, a beautiful way to write about grief, right, and recovery.
Yeah.
Are you a hiker? Are you getting into nature?
I'm in the mountains all the time. Mm-hmm. So I think that is one of my, like, how I relate to the world. Mm-hmm. You know, like when Rachel talks about the meditative and the spiritual part of yoga, like I deeply relate to that because I'm like, oh, I know exactly what they're craving because like when I'm, you know, feet in the dirt, crawling up the mountains, no earbuds in, just listening to my breathing and the sound of nature, it's like, oh, this is where you can think clearly. And you kind of have to have some physical pain, and not pain, but like it does help to move your body and have some sort of discomfort to quiet the thoughts down. So,
yeah, you're pushing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, physically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So why a children's book? I guess this could have taken many different forms. Why a children's book?
Well, the story of the trees just kind of like manifested itself to me. I did graduate in art. I'm not like an amazing visual artist. I didn't illustrate the book, but I liked the children's book because I was like, I'm going to share this with my family. Mm-hmm. And we actually will like write essays of memories and stuff like that and then share them as a family, like my siblings and in-laws, every Christmas. So it's a really fun tradition. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to like draw some pictures and I'll make a children's book out of it. And, you know, after studying art up here, you know, man, I was right across the street, visual art. One of the things I learned from art and making art and looking at art is that, you know, I used to ask a lot, what does that mean? Like, why did you make that? Why did you make it look like this? What's up with the subject matter? And the artist doesn't usually want to tell you. And I think the reason the artist doesn't want to tell you is like, it's really good to leave a lot up to interpretation. So like, to me, this is a book of grief because I lost my mom. And it's, to me, it's like so specific. Well, you could have lost someone, but if you didn't lose your mom, maybe it doesn't make sense to you. That's not true. Because it's kind of an abstract story about trees, people get different things out of it. And it is very, quite simple, I think. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of a story arc and, you know, some conflict and some resolution, and kids get something out of it. But adults, like, it's more impactful for adults, probably.
Yeah. Could you read a little bit from it?
I'd love to.
Yeah. Let's read a few pages for us. This is Will Wood from the book, And It Was Beautiful.
Yeah. So there's this family of trees, and they're growing up, and I'll just read maybe, like, getting closer to the halfway point. So as the tall trees grew, pine cones fell and smaller trees began to grow. The tall trees taught the young trees, sink your roots deep and drink the water, send your branches high and feel the sun. And so the little trees did. And then it talks about like there's a hot summer, and then one of the trees was sick, and she keeps reminding the little trees, sink your roots deep and drink the water, send your branches high and feel the sun, and you will live. And they did. Then the sick tree told them something new. I only taught you how to stay alive, which is not enough. There's more. See the birds in the sky and feel the wind in your branches and smell the flowers and listen to the bees, and it will be beautiful. The wind blew and the dirt crumbled. The tree that was sick fell. Her roots tore at the dirt and ripped rocks from their place. The mountains groaned. The woods wailed. The tree left a big hole in the ground and in the woods. The little tree's roots felt broken and it hurt a lot. But their roots ran deep. Their branches reached high. And still, they could see the birds and feel the wind and smell the flowers and listen to the bees. There was still a hole and it still hurt. And it was beautiful.
And it was beautiful. Where does that phrase come from? And it was beautiful.
So I got to throw props out to my sister, who was also an English major, and her husband, Andy Olson. He's a dentist here in town. And he'll say he's not a very creative person, but he is. The last line of the book was, but it was beautiful. And like, that's how I had written it. Like, all these things happened, but it was beautiful. And I was like, I was over at their house and she was my editor basically. And Andy said something like, you say, but it was beautiful, and but kind of negates some of the stuff in, you know, happening before it. And that's not what you're trying to do. You're trying to like grasp the pain and the beauty and the learning and all of it and keep it together and have it still be beautiful. And so he was like, you should change but to and. And I was like, and it was beautiful. And I didn't have a title for the book. And I was like, and it was beautiful. I like packed up the manuscript. I was like, that's the title. I'm out of here.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, what do you hope readers take from this? Presumably, it'd be, I guess, children, but also adults.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't want people to cry when they read it, but like,
I was crying.
I mean, it's hard, but it's hard not to get like involved into the story and like feel something deep. And that's all I want. I want people to feel things that are deep. I want them to like feel emotions that maybe they're not acknowledging and think about things that maybe they're like, oh, I haven't thought about that in this way before. So I just want people to feel something, mm-hmm. and I want it to come from within them. And this can be a catalyst.
Yeah. And I'm going to ask you guys these same questions as well, but Will, what has this done for you, this whole process?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, it hasn't made me an expert on grief, and it's crazy. I've either given away or sold about 1,500 of them, and probably most of the people are in the Valley or Utah or Idaho. And people will come to me and they'll be like, you wrote this book, like, and they want to like tell me stuff. And it's so fun to hear, not fun, it's very fulfilling to like relate to people on such a deeply emotional and spiritual level. So it's done that for me. What it hasn't done is it still hasn't like helped me feel better about my mom dying. You know, that hole is still there, and grief does change over time. But I think when a person experiences loss like that, I mean, I was 40 before I experienced a deep loss. It changes a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do I think sometimes people want to assign a timeline to your grief, right? I don't know if you experienced that. You ought to be over it by now or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, some people are very understanding, but others not.
No, it's kind of like, I think it's kind of like losing a limb. And I mean, I have all my limbs, but I imagine it would be like that. You know, you lost something and at first you're like, this will grow back. I'll be fine. And it doesn't. And it hurts at first, you know, you're trying to heal, but then you get used to it. And it's not that the problem is repaired, it's that you have like a larger capacity. I love The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. My favorite part of the book is like when his heart grows and it like breaks. And I'm like, oh, like that happened to me when I had kids. Mm-hmm. Like my heart broke and I was like, oh man, I've like been in love with my wife so deeply, but like then I had this, we made this human, and I was like, I started immediately worrying, oh no, I'm not gonna love my other kids as much as I love my first. Oh, and then they come
same,
out,
yeah, same,
and you're like, I love them, and it's there. I don't know where I was going with that, Tom.
Yeah. Okay, that's beautiful. I wonder, I mean, it's hard for adults to understand and process grief, especially hard for kids.
Yeah,
what would you say about helping kids process that?
Ah, man. I mean, I think as kids, when we feel discomfort, whether it's grief, yoga, hiking, whatever it is, they you equate discomfort with not good or incorrect. So what I would want kids to learn is that it's okay to feel hard things. It's okay to cry. It's okay to be mad. Like, it's acknowledge those feelings and give them space to breathe. But then, you know, try to come back to yourself and see the beauty that's all around.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want kids to learn. Just feel your feelings.
Right. Yeah,
don't hide from them, because we do that as adults.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to turn to you guys on that question, your parents. So, I don't know, maybe Rachel first. How do you help your kids process hard things?
Well, it's hard. Ours are 6 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
So right now it's just lots of them fighting with each other.
Okay.
And us trying to like help them like share and those types of things. We haven't. And actually Oh my gosh, I'm going to cry. My dad passed away 4 years ago. So when you were even reading those parts, I started to cry. And his birthday is tomorrow, actually. And
oh my gosh.
Like, my daughter was only 2 when he passed, and I didn't know how to, like, explain it to her, because he loved her and she loved him so much. And it was really hard.
And I remember there was a, like,
I apologize.
No, you're okay. I'll step in to help you there. I remember at your father's funeral, like, because you don't think of the 2-year-old processing grief or whatever it may be, or even understanding fully what's happening. And I remember we were at the viewing, and I tried to take her over to the over to the casket, and because Rachel's dad was a beautiful, wonderful man. Like, he accepted me with open arms. So it was, and I remember I took her over, and this is what I first learned, not thinking she would understand fully anything that was going on, because she was 2. And she immediately, like, looked out of the casket and started to cry, and she made me take her out of the room at 2 years old, because I don't know if it's something deep-seated, but she I don't know if you remember that, Rachel, but she just, like, all of a sudden her demeanor changed. Like, she understood something. I don't know what that was, because she wasn't fully talking all the way, you know, just a little bit of talking and gibberish here and there. But I could immediately sense, you could just see it in her face, like, she just understood that, oh, this was something, and she didn't want to go back in that room again. And so it was hard to discuss, because she was 2 at the time, and our son wasn't born. But I got this inherent feeling that she had some kind of underlying understanding of it all.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, it makes it especially hard. You know, 2 years old, you can't really. She doesn't have words. You don't have words. You know, to really explain it to her. So I guess you just have to be comforting and present with her, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I kind of use, that's kind of what, like, on my end in the Half Moon on the Moon, I use fantasy as that tool all the time. That is, because I kind of, what I was saying earlier, I was in that bridge time. I always call it, like, the perfect time, that most of my childhood was without the internet. I remember YouTube being born. I was like 10 or 8 or whatever. And it was like this mix of, like, the first cell phones that kids were having were at 16. So I kind of got to see these two worlds that got formed. And Rachel can attest to the way I write, and the way, like, I would even talk to my daughter about grief and stuff, I try to use the fantastical, because fantasy is the last. Mm-hmm. It's what I remember doing. I don't remember, like, playing all these video games or doing these things. I remember, like, running around the streets. We were kings, and we were soldiers, and we were fighting for the good, or whatever these stories that we made up were, and this use this imagination to process. Because I lost my grandpa, who was like my dad, when I was fairly young too. Because my dad wasn't around much at the time, so it was my grandpa. And that's how I processed it. I processed it as, like, oh, he was, you know, this great king of a man. But even these great kings fall, and what's going to be left in the wake? And I always used fantasy as a way to deal with my grief and different things, like imagining it in this fantastical way. That's why I love kids. I'm surprised I didn't do a kid's book earlier, because Rachel can attest to this too, when it's the kids' movies that get me. Like this movie, like K-pop Demon Hunter, that everyone is talking about. Like, I didn't want to believe it, and then I watched it, and I was so moved by the ending and the feeling that I got with the music and protecting the world. And I think that there's a lot of, I cry in kids' movies all the time. They get me. They get me. Like, I'm just like, any of these Disney ones come out, I'm like, and then I feel it, and I'm like, this is where the heart is. It's where emotion meets heart and the fantasy of it all. And I think that's how kids can process it a lot, too, through that. So that's how I like to explain things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Oh, I want to ask, both, I'll start with Rachel on this one. How do you process things? Is it yoga?
Yoga.
Is it yoga? Yeah. tell me about that.
In fact, like, if I'm having a bad day or anxious, Zach will say, is there a yoga class you could go to? Because I know if you go, you'll come home feeling better. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, you move your body, and there's so much of yoga is breath as well. And I mean, I'm not going to go, like, into the science of it all, but, like, the way we breathe really affects so much of our body, and even just breathing correctly can help you process things better. So you like move and flow and breathe. And one thing I love so much is the connection with other people too, because you move your body at the same time as someone else. You inhale at the same time as someone else. You exhale at the same time as someone else. So like what's giving you life is giving someone else life at the same time. And we know nothing about each other. I don't need to know your political, your religious, anything. I just know that like I moved when you moved. I inhaled when you inhaled, and we had a connection. And you got me all emotional. But so I think it's just like a really beautiful connecting practice. And it always like grounds me and brings me back kind of to reality. Like,
you know, there's so many things that we need and want out of life. And I feel like, you know, everything can just kind of go into the wind if you have human connection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like using tools for that is, mm-hmm. that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And I love to connect with people that way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
We need more of that in the world, right?
Especially, yes.
Especially today.
100%.
So, Will, you said you process through writing, not necessarily this. Mm-hmm. Children, you write in notebooks? What do you?
Yeah.
What do you
do? Or I'll like do little poems. Mm-hmm. You know, like haiku evolved in my mind. This is probably not true, but when I first remember reading about haiku, I'm like, oh, this is like what the Japanese culture did to take a picture before there were cameras. And it was like, you know, you could only use this many syllables, and there used to be more of themes to it, like a season thing. And I loved that. And so I use kind of just short formulaic things to process my feelings. And sometimes I'll have something stuck in my head. A poem I go back to often is like, I call it catch a moment. I want to catch a moment and hold it close and dear. And I go through this poem. Actually, maybe I'll read it, but like,
all right.
It helped me, process like this kind of feeling of scarcity that I was going to lose my kids being young. Like, you guys are in a hard spot with your kids. They take so much work. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I am one of those old people now that when I see young families, I'm like, oh, I'm so jealous. Like, yeah. Just rewind it for me. So I cry all the time. So you're in good company, Rachel. Yeah, so if I could read, let's see here. Oh boy, this is taking forever. Moment, catch. Okay. I want to catch a moment and hold it by its ears. I want to catch a moment, but it will take me years. To make another one just like it, I'd have to relive all my fears. To make another one just like it, I'd have to recry all my tears. I want to catch a moment and hold on real tight. I want to catch a moment, but they're always on the flight. Moments are like water. I can play in it all day, but when I try to hold it, it all just slips away. That's the thing about moments. They come, and then they're gone. To really love a moment, let it breathe, and don't hold on. So,
yeah, beautiful.
Just kind of like a lesson to myself. Mm-hmm. Like, stop trying to like hang on or reproduce the good old days. Like, just live now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you guys find it's 6 and 2, your kids, right?
Yep, that's right.
Do you guys find yourself doing that, or are you in the stage where you're just trying to survive with the kids?
I feel like...
Zach's like...
I feel like me and Will would get along really well.
I was about to say.
I'm a very nostalgic person. That's where a lot of my writing and, I mean, like you said, processing grief and things using writing... We were in that band for so long, and I was one of the main lyric writers, and that's how I did a lot of it, whatever hardships were going on, and I relate to that a lot. I'm very nostalgic. I'm already where you are when I'm still in it, mm-hmm. Rachel. I'm like, I've kind of made my daughter that way too. She's very nostalgic. She's just like, but it's she says
six
this,
years old.
Yeah, she uses this line, but it's a memory.
I tried to take her potty training potty to the dump. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, it's a memory. It's a memory. You can't throw it away. And I blame.
It is me.
Wow. Yeah.
Even like yesterday's memories or moments, Zach will be like, oh, yesterday was beautiful. That was so good. Can we have yesterday again?
Yeah.
But we have to have today and make today.
There's attention there. That's beautiful, right?
Yeah.
But I'm sure, Rachel, you're saying, well, we got to do the practical things.
We got to get rid of some stuff here. Yeah.
Zach, have you heard of the word prestalgia?
Yes.
I love that one.
That is a great word.
Yeah. Which is kind of what you're explaining a little
bit. It's exactly where I am. I'm already like, oh my gosh, she's going to be 16. We have to chase the boys away. Like, I'm like, she went into, I had a panic moment when she went into kindergarten where I'm like, all of a sudden she wasn't there all the time. And I was like, and I'm very different that I'm like, I have to work so much at the restaurant things that I'm like, when I'm home, I'm trying to hold on to every little moment. And then you're like, what are the moments I missed? And I was like that growing up too. Like when I got Christmas gifts, like I would feel bad for the gifts I didn't use as much. Like I would, like I, this is the kind of person that I always was, that I was like, I'm like, oh, I don't really like this one, but I feel bad if I don't use it because I feel like I'd be missing out on this memory, this feeling, you know? So I'm right there with you. That's my process in a similar way where it's like, I got to write it down, wrote lyrics all the time because of that. So many songs.
Let's take another break. Come back with a brief final segment. We're talking with Zach Garner and Rachel Quillen Garner, writer and illustrator, respectively, of the children's book Half Moon on the Moon. We're also talking with Will Wood, author of And It Was Beautiful, illustrations by Ryan Sonderegger. We'll credit him. We'll have more following this break.
This is Science by the Slice. Accumulated snow, says USU statistician Brendan Bean, is a slow hazard. Roof and building collapses from piled up snow don't always get the attention of more dramatic hurricanes, floods, earthquakes, and wildfires, he says. Yet the phenomenon can result in catastrophic loss of life and livelihood. Bean and undergraduate scholar Hannah Flukiger are applying statistical analysis and data sciences to spatial and environmental data in an effort to update U.S. building codes and standards related to extreme snow accumulations. Flukiger is developing a mathematical model that accounts for varied factors, including differing forces of wind, to improve forecasting accuracy in diverse topological regions throughout the United States.
This segment of Science by the Slice is brought to you by the USU College of Arts and Sciences, offering degree programs in the sciences and mathematics. Details at artsci.usu.edu.
Congratulations to Rehan Bakhtur, winner of the 2026 UPR Art Mug Contest. Right now, you can check out Rehan's winning painting titled UPR Morning to Night at upr.org or on UPR's Facebook or Instagram pages. And then don't forget to tune in during the Spring Fun Drive so you can pick up a mug featuring Rehan's design. Starting March 21st, we'll have those mugs available for $10 a month or more donations. We also want to thank all of the incredibly talented and creative artists who submitted to the contest this year.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We are discovering two children's books today written by Cache Valley authors. We're talking with Will Wood, author of And It Was Beautiful, and Zach Garner and Rachel Quillen Garner, writer and illustrator, respectively, of Half Moon on the Moon. So Zach, Will read a poem off air here during the break. You said you have a poem.
Yeah, let's.
Did you read that for us?
I was like, this was great. I love when it's what I liked about like performing with other musicians too. As soon as you start getting the creative juices going, all of a sudden everyone's reading their stuff, and there's like, that's what I love about artists too. If you're really good artist and it's meaningful, like you learn from it. You're not like jealous of someone else's stuff or anything like that. And I always felt like I grew the most when you're around other writers, when you're around and you're bouncing ideas, and all of a sudden that's when beauty's made sometimes. But this poem is called The Fall, and I wrote this for yoga as well, so it kind of relates. But it was mainly written for my daughter as well to try to explain what happens when you fall down, like you got to get back up. So it's called The Fall. May I ask you a question? Why do we fall? Time can stand still, fall silent, and crawl. As the days blur to nights and the nights extend long, emotions like fire, minds caught as we stall, as we struggle to think, find meaning, a purpose, hearts breaking, we drown but show joy on the surface, a lie that we sink in, a spiraling thunder. The scream in our souls drags us deeper and darker. We fall and we fall and we fall to the bottom. But when we open our eyes, we see roots we'd forgotten. A tree to the surface, growing tall through the depths. A light somewhere distant, lost but still kept. We remember the love and the laughs and the joys. We remember we're worth it, that the smiles weren't ploys. That this lie had consumed us and filled us with doubt. But it forgot that the truth burns to come out. We're not broken, not beaten, not ugly, not lost. Not forgotten or crippled, not dragged down by cost. And the cost, it was great, but our courage was stronger. And when we swam to the surface, defeated no longer. We crest through the waves and our skin meets the sun. The war, it was over. The battle was won. So I ask you again, why do we fall? We fall, as we'll learn, that like trees, we grow tall.
Yeah, beautiful.
And that relates to your story, actually. Yeah, I like, love there's that. A lot of tree imagery in this poem, that, yeah. Actually.
I love that.
I wanted to ask you, you, in the band, you wrote the lyrics.
Yes.
Mostly. So tell me about that. Compare and contrast poetry with lyrics.
Like, quite honestly, I always say this, like, writing lyrics and writing poetry are almost the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, this exact poem, if I turned it, like, started playing some major chords, I could probably sing it instead of just read it off, because it's... It all is just poetry in the end, and it relates in the same way that it's usually trying to tell a deep story or a pain and or relate some kind of story. Like, it's silly, but they all often say that artists' best work come out of pain, and that when they get happier, like especially with musicians, you'll see some of their early albums or something like that, and a lot of people be like, that was them, that's when you felt it, and it's probably because they were angsty and they had pain and things had grown, and then they grew up
and they got successful,
and then a lot of the music changes a little bit, evolves, because you can't, that same pain's not quite there all of a sudden. And for some people, that's probably not true. It probably still remains. But I know that when I was writing lyrics a lot, like, I had a high school sweetheart that we had broken up, that we were together all through high school, and that kind of broke me down. But I, through a lot of that pain and through a lot of that pain of just being a teenager and parental issues and different things, that's where I learned a lot of emotions and was able to put that into song a lot. And they really correlate well.
Yeah. We'll just have a couple of minutes left here. Let me ask you first, Will, what's next? Another children's book? Something else coming up?
Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, this book, I never really set out to, like, write a book. But after I just wrote the words, Lauren, my wife, encouraged me to do it. And I'm like, maybe this will be a one and done. But I will say it's been deeply fulfilling. I love that it's out in the world. And I love that it doesn't feel like mine anymore, because, you know, it just feels like something that needed to exist, and it's there. But yeah, there are other stories. I would love to do a little series about, I've made these characters in my head, this lumberjack, and he's got a family, and they just talk about life lessons, and I would love to do like a whole series. And I have like smatterings, but that's in the works, but it's nowhere close to being done.
Okay. We'll possibly see that.
And I would probably have Ryan Sondreger illustrate it.
Yeah. Yes.
His
beautiful
characters are so fun. Like, his humans are, like, great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. We haven't said his name enough. Ryan Sondreger. Illustrations are beautiful in this book. So, Zach and Rachel, what's next on the horizon? That's, of course, right. you got your yoga studio. Tell me again the name.
Yeah, it is Soul Speak Yoga. And then we also run the Urban Trail Racing Series. So we have a bunch of races coming up. If Zach writes more, I don't know that I would draw more.
Oh, okay.
But I would maybe try. It took me like a year to draw these pictures.
Oh, really?
I'm really not.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm a doodler. So, but I would love.
Says, yeah.
I encourage him, of course, to write, because his words are very beautiful. But so maybe you could write another children's book.
Well, you know,
and I'll do yoga.
My daughter wants that ballet book. I'm just going to take a little more research. But that's, yeah, I'd say we've got a bunch of new stuff at the yoga studio. We just put in a sauna. So there's a red light sauna.
Yeah.
And you want to do an ice bath possibly in the future.
I have all dreams.
Yeah. So we big plans. But as far as like.
But you should publish your novel.
Yeah. We have been looking into that. Yeah. But that is entirely different content matter for sure. It's more of a kind of a psychological thriller type thing. So that's a whole different. But writing this, it made me also realize that I should write more like this because it really taps into that. I keep using the word the fantasy of it, but for me specifically, it just takes me back to writing kids' books, and it just takes me back. I wrote that. That's something I never said to. I wrote when I was a kid. Like I just have still all of them. Pages of handwritten, misspelled, stories. Because I was always a story writer. I used to illustrate myself. It was really bad. Stick figures, but it's fine. Yeah. Kid drawing. But I'd say that's what's next. I want to keep looking into the writing stuff. I've kind of wanted to get back into music too. Like our band's music's still on Spotify. Like you can still find it today, but we're not currently together or anything. Mm-hmm. So probably just keep the arts flowing and always just – look into the ballet book. My daughter would kill me if I didn't try. So
I love it.
Well, we'll look for that as well. We've been talking with Will Wood, author of the children's book, And It Was Beautiful. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Appreciate it. And Zach Garner and Rachel Quillen Garner, writer and illustrator, respectively, of Half Moon on the Moon. Thanks, you guys, for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
It's been a great time.
And thanks, everybody, for listening to Access Utah.